inflation ages, during inflation. There's recently written a book, and the title of the book is A New Program in Cosmology. It's called Physical Foundations of Cosmology. So we're very happy that he's here. And we'll speak about inflation after doubling. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Probably this talk I will give perhaps 15 years ago, 20 years ago, but without important thing about experimental confirmation, as you understood. Because 25 years ago, everything what I was talking about belonged not to the physics, but so-called natural philosophy. You see, now it's becoming physics. And right now also all these things which we discovered long time ago, that probably in the process of many years we verified, are becoming some kind of reality, as you understand. Of course, you probably heard a lot of talks about inflation and about 1001 inflationary scenario. And this is not very good attitude when people think. First of all, when they say about inflation, when they think about scenarios, because there is something general behind all these scenarios, what is independent of the scenarios. And when I speak about inflation, I don't mean some kind of complicated inflationary scenarios where, for instance, you introduce two or three scalars, because with the help of many parameters in the theory, you would explain any kind of observational data, as you understand. Because there is not too many curves there to explain. Yeah? And as Landau was saying, give me two, three parameters and I will fit you any experimental curves. You see? And only in the case when there are three experimental curves and one parameter, it becomes very non-trivial. And even Landau perhaps would not be able to do this thing if these three curves have nothing to do with reality. So, what I will be talking today, I will be talking about inflation as about theory with minimal number of parameters which fits several experimental curves. And what I'm going to stress today, I'm going to stress the most important and I think very impressive result of this W3 math release, to which perhaps a lot of people just didn't pay attention, but I think it's just extremely important and much more important even than all these kind of cosmological parameters. Okay, so you will see. Now, what is this? Of course, at first glance, it looks like Hollywood picture. But on numerical speculation, but it's not Hollywood, it's reality. It's the data of Sloan digital survey. And here people measured the redshift at the moment of half of a million of galaxies so they can reproduce the three-dimensional structure of the universe. You understand, till recently, this kind of homogeneity of the universe was only some kind of hypothesis, paradigm. Now it's established fact because we know from this data that really we live not in the center of spherically symmetric universe, but we live in some place in homogeneous and isotropic universe. So, cosmological principle became reality in this case. Now, the data, real data of Sloan digital survey refers to this part of the universe which is recently relatively close to us. But in observation, we can go much further in a sense that we could get direct picture of very early universe, namely, we can find out how universe looked like when it was 1,000 times smaller. Why? Because at this moment of time, photons decoupled, then they traveled for a long time to us and brought us a little bit dirty, not a little bit actually, in fact, very dirty, picture of this very early universe. But experimentalists were so smart during last time, and also technology was developed tremendously fast, so they were able to take this dirt, which is 4 orders of magnitude higher than the real picture, from this picture, and they discovered that at the moment when universe was 1,000 times smaller, it was looking extremely homogeneous and isotropic in all scales, and relative fluctuation of the energy density were at the level of 10 minus 5. Moreover, people were able to measure the spectrum of this perturbation, which they see as a fluctuation of the temperature on the sky, and these are tiny fluctuations, and the spectrum which people measured, what they found, is in excellent agreement, as you will see, with the prediction of the theory, and moreover, this spectra allows us to make so-called precision cosmology. So, this data which I showed to you is not astrophysics, it's real physics. What is the difference between real physics and astrophysics? You know, in astrophysics there is always a lot of systematics. In real physics, systematic is under control. So, in this case, of course, cosmology entered the new stage in the development, it became real physics. Before that, it was something like cosmic archaeology, as you understand, because we used ritual remnant to restore the past history of our universe. Now, with the appearance of this data, cosmology became the part of physics because there were predictions, and now people can measure, compare the prediction of the theory with the result of the measurement. And, of course, up until now, they are in very good agreement.
So are you saying there's no systematics in the remark?
There is, systematic which is under control. And for instance, when we speak about low multiples, then there could be quite important systematics. But what we have in low envelope scales, I think, systematics there are under complete control. And as you will see, if it would not be so, then of course these kind of nice pictures where you hardly see there or once you would never get. So it's not the same systematic as, for instance, even in supernova type 1A, where you do not know precisely the luminosity. There are standard candles, but you know that these standard candles, besides of the internal reasons, is just standard candles with accuracy.
If you read up with polarization and with low multiples, we still probably systematic dominating?
You see, there I think we are still systematic dominating, but I think low multiples is not a big deal, and people make too much deal out of this entropy. You see? Because they wanted to have sensation. But you know that there is, besides of this kind of stuff, there is a lot of other stuff.
Okay, sorry to insist on it, but the implication is that there's no.
The implication.
I mean, either there is systematic or there is anisotropy.
No, global anisotropy would be some kind of crazy excess. I did comment on it, yes? Or some kind of, for instance, there are a lot of stories to which I will go, okay? So they are entertaining, but at the beginning I want first to sketch some kind of theoretical picture, and then we will go to the discussion of all these kind of features in the observations. You see? Good. So, this kind of sentence I found, not this kind of sentence, but this sentence I found in Weinberg's book, and Weinberg wrote it in the book First 3 Minutes. Probably because he was very much impressed by nuclear synthesis. And nuclear synthesis data actually, in fact, really also very impressive that we could explain this kind of composition of the universe only if we use this kind of standard picture of the universe. And this sentence Weinberg wrote many years ago, that our mistake is not that we take our theories too seriously, but that we do not take them seriously enough. It's always hard to realize that these numbers and equations we play with, that our best have something to do with the real world. And you understand that actually when you were playing this equation 25 years ago, then of course the main purpose was to get nice formula, to get some kind of explanation for something, and the main criteria for us in Russia at least. And the main substitution for experiment was the opinion of Zeldovich. But as you understand, that authorities are very good. But there is one authority in the nature itself, with which no kind of political authorities or political scientific authorities can be compared. So, I think in this sense, nature is much more important than, for instance, what Witten, Polyakov, or somebody will say. And in this case, when we are studying this kind of thing, of course, we have to think first of all about experiments, as you understand. And of course, when the thing goes to the experiment, then they become really very impressive. Not for young people. Young people still shouldn't care, don't care so much about experiments. They care more what the advisor will tell them. But when you have no advisor, then you have to appeal to somebody. And in this case, actually, the main guy perhaps will be expert. So, let me recall you how, not how inflationary ideas appear, because you know that the history is very often much more complicated than the outcome. Yeah? And history is sometimes extremely messy. Therefore, I will not go to, I will not follow historical things in the presentation of inflation. I just will follow some kind of logical scheme to say how inflation would naturally appear and how inflation could be understood even by kids in the basic school, not in the gymnastics. Because it's a very simple idea, in fact, that you can deliver this idea to anybody, in fact, and you can explain it even to the people on the street, if you use the right words. Now, how one could naturally come to the idea of inflation? You see, we have the present state of our universe, and we could address the question, what kind of initial conditions one needed to arrange in our universe to produce something so nice as what we see today? Now, what we know for sure about the universe today, we know that the universe is expanding according to the Hubble law, and this law tells us that if I would consider the distribution of the matter in large scale, then the whole universe, the evolution of the whole universe could be characterized with the help of one simple parameter or one simple function, which is only the function of time, which is called the scale factor. When the scale factor increases in 5 times, then it means that all distances increased 5 times, and it means that the size of the universe, in this case I could speak about size, increased 5 times. But you see, you have to understand that the size, I mean in this sense, relative distances. The total size of the universe could be even infinite, as you know. In this sense, size is conditional. Now, if I would take this law or distance between two galaxies, and this is called Calmukian distance, which is the constant of integration in the equation, if I will differentiate this equation, then I will get that the relative velocity between two faraway galaxies is proportional to the time derivative of the scale factor, which characterizes the rate of the expansion of the universe. Now, we know that the universe is expanding, we know that it's homogeneous, we could address the question, what kind of initial conditions we needed to arrange in some early moment of time, as I said, to get what we see today. What kind of independent initial conditions you could imagine? First of all, if you would have task to create universe, you would need some matter, you would take this matter and distribute it somehow in the space. And it's in your choice, in your hand, how to distribute this matter. You could distribute it completely in homogeneity, if you are very lazy, or if you wanted to create, for instance, homogeneous isotropic universe, then you would need to put it everywhere in the same amount. With very high accuracy, because in usual conditions, as we know, gravity do not correct our laziness. So gravity doesn't remove inhomogeneities in the distribution of the matter. So let's ask first question, what was so unusual about distribution of the matter? So today what we see this homogeneous distribution of the matter in the scale 10^28 centimeters. Now, let's take this observable picture of the universe, and let's bring it to some early moment of time, and the earliest moment of time, you can take 10^-43 seconds, because it's the minimum possible moment of time when you could speak still about classical picture of space-time. And it's clear that at this moment of time, the size of the universe was smaller by the ratio of initial value of scale factor to the current value of the scale factor. Because scale factor shows you how really it was stretched. So you would ask the question, how large is this size from which the whole observable page of the universe originated? But when you ask, what does it mean, how large? You have to compare it with something. If you want to know, it was large or small. And the natural scale with which you could compare this page of the universe, this page of the space from which the whole observable universe originated, is the scale of causally connected region at this moment of time. And the scale of causally connected region is, of course, speed of light multiplied by this 10 minus 43 seconds. So now let's do simple exercise. Let's divide the size from which universe originated by the size of causally connected region at this initial moment of time. Then you make simple estimate. Is there joke? Yeah, there is. So, like when you divide AI divided by EI, you estimate it as AI dot. You see, it's Russian style estimate. Because, you know, that up to the coefficient of the order of one, it's correct. You make this division, and then you are getting that this ratio, which we are interested in, is given by the initial rate of the expansion of the universe to the current speed of the expansion of the universe. But we know on the other side that the gravity is attractive force. It means that when you begin expansion, the gravity tries to decelerate this expansion. So from here it inevitably follows that the initial speed of the expansion in this case was larger than the current speed of the expansion, and this ratio was larger than 1. So you know, irrespective of anything, that in the condition where gravity is attractive force, you needed to arrange homogeneous isotropic distribution of the matter in the scales which were larger than the causally connected scale. And as you understand, all physical laws, for instance, act only within the causally connected regions. Therefore, you already, in this case, know that some kind of causal physical mechanism could not be responsible for the preparing homogeneous isotropic peaks in the space from which the whole universe originated. If you would calculate this ratio for the matter-dominated universe, in matter-dominated universe, scale factor is proportional to square root of t, so you would get for this ratio the number t today to t Planckian, and it would be 10, here 10 17, here 10 minus 43 seconds, 43 seconds, and then you would get 10 30. It means that in terms of 90 causally disconnected region, the universe was prepared in tremendously homogeneous isotropic state. You see, in 1090, how much is it? It's very large number because the number of atoms in our universe is 1080. You see? And I am not saying that, therefore I am not working with numbers like 10500. Because this goes beyond any kind of imagination, of course. Now, after you prepare universe in homogeneous state, you have the other task. You have to give initial velocity to the matter. And if you are not very careful, then of course you could give to one element one velocity, to the other randomly velocity like this one, and you would spoil immediately homogeneous. Therefore, you have to prepare also initial velocity field in a very careful way. So you would not square homogeneity, and this careful way, that initial velocity should be distributed according to the Hubble law. So it's one extra task. Let's assume that you did even this kind of thing. But then there is a question, what was initial Hausdorff parameter in this Hubble law, velocity distribution? To estimate what was very unusual about this thing, you again can take big sample of matter in our universe and compare initial kinetic plus potential energy for this big sample of the matter, because kinetic energy is positive, potential energy is energy of self-gravity, to the kinetic energy. So you can make the same exercise which I did. I don't do it because I want to save some time. And you will get for this kind of ratio 10 minus 60. So it means that two numbers, kinetic, initial kinetic energy, and initial potential energy should compensate each other with unbelievable accuracy. You see, if you even manage to create Hubble flow, nevertheless, there is a lot of unusual things about it. And it means that for a given matter distribution, the error, larger than 10 minus 58% in the initial velocities, would lead to the failure in the creation of universe of our type. Either universe would become empty immediately, or it would recollapse. And this kind of precision, I think, is unimaginable even for Swiss people, who are doing very good works. So, it's clear that it was a second problem, yeah, which we needed to explain. And people were calling this problem flatness problem. Why? Because the special geometry of our universe, of course, depends on this kind of ratio. And more smaller this ratio, more close universe at the given moment of time to the Euclidean geometry. So how people lived with this problem? Of course, as usually, because they couldn't say anything, they used the anthropic principle. And they just said, if, okay, nobody would create this kind of initial conditions, then there would be no these stupid people who would ask this question. So it was very, I think, semi-logical way of thinking, yeah? Semi-logical way, I would say, because universe could be a little bit more anisotropic and was not contrary to the anthropic principle. But because people actually had no idea, they were thinking that anthropic principle is some kind of medicine against this kind of stupid. But you understand that in principle, of course, the solution for this problem was very simple. I don't understand actually why people didn't realize it a long time ago, but nevertheless, they could realize it even in 1970. You know, because at this time, you could think that the first inflationary scenario was invented by Sitarik and Mimus. It was before Friedman University. So, to understand actually how to solve this problem, we have to see where is the origin of this problem. And the origin of this problem is in the fact that gravity is always attractive force. So you begin with infinitely large velocity in Big Bang, and what gravity does, it just tries to decelerate you. It creates one more problem, who gave this incredibly large initial velocity. So, and of course, in this case, the ratio of the initial velocity to the current speed of the expansion is always tremendously large, and as you have seen, this ratio enters null form. So if you want to avoid this kind of problem, what can you do? You can do a very simple thing. You can just take this part of the expansion away and substitute instead of it this kind of evolution. So you would begin with very small initial velocity, then you have to assume that gravity was repulsive force, acting like anti-gravity for some time, and then it was accelerating expansion, then there was transition, you came to the stage of decelerated expansion. And in this case, initial speed of the expansion is less than the current speed of the expansion, and you are producing the whole observable universe from one causally connected patch, and you could make mistake 100% of the velocities, because the stage of accelerated expansion would correct this mistake. You see? So, idea is very simple. Inflation is the stage of accelerated expansion with gravity acts like anti-gravity. And it's necessary condition for solving this kind of initial condition problem. But again, you could ask me, what does it mean to solve initial condition problem? At the beginning, people were saying, we solve initial condition problem. But some people understand solution of initial condition problem like explanation what was before. Here, no way to answer this question. Here, solution of initial condition problem, you have to understand in some kind of Pickwick sense. That this kind of stage of accelerated expansion allows us to explain the whole observable piece of the universe as originated from one causally connected region. You see, and it's solved. In this sense, it's not a complete substitute for the initial condition problem. Therefore, you have all these renormalizing kind of statement, because even in 1980, we thought that we know more about pre-inflationary states than we think right now. You know, so now actually, in fact, our knowledge has grown, but we see that we understand much less about this stage. Nevertheless, this stage actually is quite important, and as you understand, the most important thing about this stage is that the existence of this stage leads to experimental predictions which could be verified, and in fact many of these experimental predictions depends just on the fact that there was this kind of stage of accelerated expansion and do not depend even on the particular particle physics justification for this stage. So now, necessary condition for successful inflation is the following. We would, of course, in this case, when we are producing the whole universe from one causally connected region, we could say that we have to distribute here matter homogeneously and isotropically. But you know that if somebody gets successful, then he becomes more ambitious, yeah? And here, of course, natural question to address would be, but when we have to prepare everything homogeneously and isotropically, even within one causally connected region. Maybe if this stage helped us to explain everything as originated from this causally connected region, maybe actually it would help us also to explain everything, yeah, if we would study with this extremely inhomogeneous distribution of the matter, within which we could always find some kind of, just by probability, quasi-homogeneous region, and then nevertheless explain today homogeneity and isotropy of the universe. And in fact it works. And it works because when you stretch this kind of inhomogeneous distribution in the stage of accelerated expansion, new inhomogeneities do not arise. This is so-called no classical Hare theorem for the stage of accelerated expansion, and this theory goes only in the case when you have accelerated expansion. Very easy to prove. Then what you do? You take some small sub-piece of the causally connected region, and you produce the whole observable universe from sub-piece of the causally connected region, which is much, much smaller than the size of this causally connected region. But in this case, you have to satisfy the following necessary conditions. The initial speed of the expansion should be not just smaller than the current speed of the expansion, but should be much, much smaller than the current speed of the expansion. You see, it should be 5 orders of magnitude smaller, because you want to remove this trace of large inhomogeneities on the scale of one causally connected region. When you set these things, then you get immediately the following result. If you use Einstein equation, introduce this cosmological parameter, which is the ratio of potential energy to kinetic energy for big sample of the matter, then from 0, 0 Einstein equation, you are getting the following formula. And you see, if this formula enters this kind of ratio, for this kind of ratio, you know that it should be much smaller than one, because you now became ambitious and you want to explain the origin of the whole universe from sub-region, tiny sub-region of one causally connected region. Therefore, this term disappears and you are getting that only the total should be equal to one, and this is one of the most important predictions of inflation, which doesn't depend on any kind of scenario. This important prediction also has kinematical origin. And this prediction tells us that irrespective of the particle theory, yeah, whatever you want, you will discover all the components in the universe right now, you will sum up the energy density of this component, and this energy density should be precisely equal to the critical energy density. It's not because appropriate particle physics fits the interaction constant, which determines the content of the universe. It's because expansion of the universe on kinematic fits all kinds of particle theories in this case. You see, and this is extremely robust prediction of inflation. But people, okay, if somebody has a question, how people manage to get open inflation, I am ready to discuss it, but only in the question section. Yeah.
In the Big Bang model, A dot I is infinite at the singularity.
AI is infinite in the singularity, it's in Big Bang model. You yes. see? And of course, in Big Bang.
So, what about the initial singularity?
About the initial singularity. First of all, I begin with AI equal to zero. It's not Big Bang model. So, I assume that, okay, there was this inflationary stage that could begin with zero velocity, and that is the reason for Big Bang is gravity, which acted like anti-gravity. You see? And this, is, by the way, is removing the question about Big Bang. Now, second thing, transition from inflation to the stage of decelerated expansion should be smooth enough because you don't want to spoil homogeneity which was created. And of course, the only thing which we know till now in this present consideration is that this stage of accelerated expansion should be put before nuclear synthesis if you don't want to spoil all the prediction of the homogeneity. How gravity could become reversed? Again, without going to particle theory, we could just write Einstein equations, now Newton equation, is the second Newton law. And then you see that acceleration is minus energy density. If energy density in Newtonian theory is positive, then you have always deceleration. In general relativity, this equation is modified in a very easy way because pressure also contributes to the creation of the gravity via energy momentum tensor. And then you understand that if you want to get positive acceleration, so the stage of accelerated expansion, then you have just to find some state of the matter for which epsilon plus AD is smaller than zero. So you have to break dominance energy condition, which people use, by the way, to prove the theorems about singularity, and in this case, you are getting anti-gravity. The simple example, when the energy, or the easiest example, energy dominance condition is broken, is so-called cosmological constant for which pressure is equal minus energy density. And in this sense, you could say that people discovered this state of matter already in 1916, when Einstein introduced this cosmological constant, and you could say that the first inflationary model, not very successful, why? Because there's no graceful exit, was discovered by the sitter before even Friedman model was discovered. But this is some kind of perverse way of thinking, so you should take it too seriously. You understand? Because you should just discover this, if you should realize the importance of the things. And of course, nobody was thinking about all these problems. But, as I told, cosmological constant is completely useless. The sitter is useless for successful inflation. Therefore, global properties of the sitter and holographic principle is useless, are useless for cosmology. Right? Because what we utilize in cosmology, we utilize the sitter expansion only as zero-order approximation. Because finally, we want to have graceful exit from inflation. Therefore, we have to have deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant. Now, under which conditions we could get this kind of deviation of equation of state? At this point, we have to go to so-called scenarios. I put here, okay, not 1,001 question mark, but enough. But you shouldn't go to all these scenarios. You have to realize very simple thing, okay? That what you need, in fact, you need the description of the universe, not on the fundamental level for prediction, but on some kind of effective level. When you characterize the content of the universe with the help of energy density and pressure. And your main problem is to arrange appropriate equation of state, yeah, which will give you the stage of accelerated expansion. Therefore, for inflation, you just simply need that plus epsilon is much smaller than epsilon. In this case, pressure is approximately equal minus energy density, and you have inflation. You see? Now, how to get this equation of state? Doesn't matter because, you see, I could write a simple model which includes all the scenarios. For instance, you could consider arbitrary Lagrangian, which depends on kinetic energy, which is phi dot squared, and phi. Then, for this Lagrangian, square root of minus gd for x, the energy momentum tensor can be written down in the form which we use hydrodynamical fluid with the energy density, which is 2x, then derivative with respect to x from the Lagrangian, minus p. Lagrangian cell plays a role of pressure. Energy density is expressed in terms of the Lagrangian in such a way. So you have to arrange simply the regime when this simple first term is much smaller than second term. It could be done by two ways. Either you claim that this phi x, which is phi dot squared, is extremely small, it's so-called slow roll inflationary scenarios, or you could just state Lagrangian, which is deeply dependent on the kinetic energy, it's high inflationary scenario. But for me, it doesn't matter what kind of scenario would be here. You see? Because everything what I will need for prediction, as you will see, is effective equation of state. Because after I have this kind of effective equation of state, or I have dependence pressure on the energy density, I would consider something more substantial, namely the perturbation which would be generated in the universe. Now, of course, you know that everything what we see and everything what we measure are the perturbations which were generated perhaps from the initial quantum fluctuations, and for these kind of perturbations there are so-called solid, robust prediction for the spectrum. And I will show you in terms of the equation of state what are these robust predictions for the spectrum. As I said, main bonus from inflation is generation of primordial spectrum of inhomogeneity. Now, as I said, inflation wash away all pre-inflationary inhomogeneities. Why? Because the stage of accelerated expansion has no classical heads. But it doesn't mean that the stage of accelerated expansion has no quantum heads. And quantum heads, what it is, it's inevitable quantum fluctuations, which will always be there. When you will stretch these quantum fluctuations from one region, then in the same region they will be generated because you need to satisfy Heisenberg uncertainty relation. Yeah? These quantum fluctuations are nevertheless are extremely small in big scales. It's clear that these quantum fluctuations are related somehow with quantum gravity, right? And therefore, the typical scale which would appear there is a Planck scale. Now, because, for instance, gravity wave has no mass, there is no any other scale, the most reasonable estimate, which I could get actually more precisely, for the amplitude of the gravity wave, which is dimensionless, how it depends on the scale, is this ratio. So the ratio of Planck scale to the scale in which we want to measure fluctuations. And if you would take now galactic scales, then you would find that in galactic scales, the amplitude of the vacuum fluctuations, okay, gravity wave, will be of the order of 10 minus 58. You see, the amplitude of so-called scalar perturbation, which you need to explain galaxies, is even smaller. But in fact, what we observe today, the amplitude of the metric fluctuation in galactic scale is 10 minus 5. So it means that if you want to utilize these initial quantum fluctuations, which are large only in Planckian scale, to explain large scale structure of the universe, you have to find the way how to amplify these quantum fluctuations by 50 orders of magnitude. And now what I will do, I will prove you no-Hall theorem, which tells that in expanded universe, it's impossible to do this kind of thing if you don't have the stage of accelerated expansion. You see, it's no-Hall theorem. After that, okay, you could try to go around this no-Hall theorem, but you have to keep in mind that it's not so easy. From my point of view, it's impossible. At least nobody says. Quantum metric fluctuations are big enough, 10 minus 5, only in the scale which are close to the Planck scale. What is my task? My task will be to transfer these fluctuations, stretching them to galactic scale. And how to do this thing? And what would be happening with perturbation to understand these kind of things? Let's consider plane wave perturbation. Okay, this is a given Kamuvian wavelength, which expansion of the universe is stretching. So it's like red-shifted plane wave, the physical size of which is growing proportionally to the scale factor. And after that, I will take small scale, close to the Planckian scale, and we try to bring actually this scale, with the help of stretching, to the galactic scale. Will I succeed to bring this Planckian fluctuation to large scale?
or not. In such a way that they do not lose their amplitude, of course, depends on the evolution of this perturbation. On the other side, you know that evolution of this perturbation crucially depends how large is physical scale of perturbation compared to the four-dimensional Curie scale of the universe. Why? Because you know that on the scales which are smaller than Einstein elevator, you can forget about gravity. But when the size of perturbation in light is larger than the Planckian scale, then of course you understand that the curvature effect of the universe becomes important, and then you expect that the Hubble expansion, for instance, could transfer energy to your perturbation. Otherwise, okay, this kind of expansion is irrelevant. Now, let me actually tell you the result how perturbation evolves if I am considering okay, scales which are smaller than the size of Einstein elevator, which is inverse Hubble time, and the size of the scales which are larger than Einstein elevator. It's clear that in the scales, you can solve the thing smaller than Einstein elevator. When you are stretching perturbation of the muscles field, the amplitude is dropping down. And, okay, you could think about this kind of stuff, that it's evolution of the perturbation. But in fact, it's not evolution of the perturbation. It's some kind of effect of evolution when you describe Minkowski space in expanding coordinate system. Nothing more, because this kind of fictitious evolution doesn't disturb your vacuum spectrum of the fluctuation. Because I said that in the vacuum, amplitude of perturbation is inversely proportional to the scale. So what is happening as a result of this thing? The size of perturbation grows, amplitude drops, and vacuum spectra is undisturbed. But you are getting some kind of impression that there is evolution here. And perturbation, which you take in this case, goes away. Instead of this perturbation comes the other perturbation from some Planckian scale, or something like this one. And therefore, people raise at a certain point some question worried about the role of super Planckian physics for this kind of stuff. There is no any role because people confuse the effective description coordinate effect is a real physical effect. In fact, you shouldn't think necessarily about this perturbation like they came from the Planckian scale. You could think about them if you took something from there as newly generated because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Therefore, this kind of trans-Planckian problem is for the invention of the mind, which has nothing to do with physics, by the way. And it could be addressed also in the same way for the Hawking gradient. Now, here, as I said, it's not evolution, it's just description of the Minkowski vacuum within Einstein elevator, yeah, in expanded coordinate system. But the things becomes very different when you consider the scale which are larger than the curvature scale. In this case, the whole, the curvature of the universe could influence on the perturbation. And Hubble expansion can transfer the part of its energy to the perturbation. In fact, if you would solve the equation in this case, then you would find that when you are stretching perturbation with the size which are larger than the size of Einstein elevator, then the amplitude for the gravity wave, for instance, remains precisely constant. The amplitude for the scalar perturbations, which are characterized by the fluctuation of the scalar field, even a little bit growing, and it's growing proportionally to the deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant. Also, you have to pay attention that in these formulas comes epsilon plus p. And you are getting here zero for the case of cosmological constant. Therefore, of course, if you want to study perturbation and inflation, you should never use of scalar perturbation inflation, you should never use the theta as a background. In this case, you are getting nonsense. But on the other side, we know that this kind of formulas, this kind of factor refers to post-inflationary stage, and in the case of the theta, you can never get post-inflationary stage. For the case of pressure to epsilon constant, the amplitude also remains constant, like for gravity wave. Now let's use these two simple facts. I will speed up.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
Doesn't this make the problem of getting 10 to the minus 5 worse? Because the amplitude changes dramatically when you do.
No, not dramatically. You will see. The amplitude is changing just a little bit because deviation of the equation of state, yeah, is changing logarithmically with the scale factor during inflation. So you just see on this picture. So let me prove this noble thing. So you take perturbation from the Plotkin scale, here is a scale factor, and then universe expands and you stretch this perturbation to galactic scale. How amplitude of this perturbation will be changing depends how fast is changing the size of Einstein elevator. If you have no inflation, then you understand that the size of Einstein elevator, which is scale factor divided by the derivative of the scale factor, is growing faster than the scale factor itself. Because A dot is decreasing, no inflation, it's decelerated expansion. Therefore, the walls of Einstein elevator are running much faster from you than you are stretching your perturbation. And in this case, perturbation which was within Einstein elevator will always remain there. So what does it mean? What does this mean from the point of view of the amplitude of perturbation? It means that the amplitude will be always dropping in inverse proportion to the scale factor. You start here with 10 minus 5, you arrive here with amplitude 10 minus 58. Because this kind of evolution is fictitious evolution. You will not disturb your vacuum state. So, what is the conclusion from here? Conclusion is very simple. No inflation, no any chance to amplify quantum fluctuation in galactic scale till the value 10 minus 5 in expanding universe. Now, what happens when we have inflation? When we have inflation, the curvature scale, because A dot is growing, grows much, much slower than the size of the perturbation. So the scale of Einstein elevator remains practically unchanged. You begin here within Einstein elevator. You know what is vacuum here, because here you feel like in Minkowski space. Then you stretch perturbation. At the beginning, amplitude is dropping. But at the moment when the size of perturbation becomes larger than the curvature scale, perturbation starts to get energy from the Hubble expansion, and then after that it keeps practically constant amplitude. And you are arriving on galactic scale with the same amplitude which perturbation had here at the moment when it crossed Hubble curvature scale. You see, it's not usually what is important for perturbation. It's again some kind of confusion. It's not horizon, it's not particle horizon, it's not event horizon, it's a curvature scale, because curvature scale is dynamical thing. Horizons are kinematical thing. Of course, in inflation, curvature scale coincides with event horizon, in decelerated universe with particle horizon. But you have to keep in mind what is important really, physically important is curvature. Now you could use this picture to build the spectrum of perturbation very easy. So what you do here is the amplitude of gravity waves, stellar perturbation. Here is the physical scale. Now I will show you a little pattern. It's the size of Einstein elevator. It's initial spectra like in Minkowski space for the rapid fluctuation. So what you do, you take gravity wave and stellar perturbation with this kind of amplitude. Now, you wait a little bit. Expansion stretches your perturbation. So the physical size for this perturbation grows. So they move here. What happened with the amplitude of these perturbations? Because at this moment of time, they have already size larger than the scale of the horizon. The amplitude, of course, is frozen. Therefore, you see, they keep the constant amplitude. But there is difference between gravity wave and scalar perturbation, because as I told you already, amplitude of scalar perturbation is even growing a little bit. Why? Because this amplitude is proportional to the deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant, and towards the end of the inflation, of course, this deviation should grow, grow, and grow, and finally you have graceful legs. What happens with this perturbation? It just slides along this vacuum spectra. Nothing happens with this vacuum spectra. Now, during inflation, the size of Einstein elevator also is changing a little bit. Why? Because the size of Einstein elevator is proportional inverse size. Energy density and derivative of energy density is proportional epsilon plus p. You see? Minus epsilon, minus 3h, epsilon plus p. Epsilon plus p is different from zero because you want to change how it's called, to deviate finally, to go away from inflation. Therefore, size is inevitably growing. Therefore, when next perturbation comes, it has small amplitude. You see? Then perturbation leaves the thing, but gravity wave keeps constant amplitude, but this amplitude is a little bit smaller because it came late. This amplitude for the scalar perturbation grows a little bit, but you understand also that on offset of the Einstein derivative, it was small. And then what you are getting finally, you are getting the spectrum like this. So it's not flat spectrum. As most of the people were saying for very, very long time, inflation never predicts highest conservative spectra. It always predicts spectra which is growing in the region of the large scales. You see, so it always predicts red tilted spectra, and this spectra depends on the scales logarithmically in most of the models with graceful, in all the models with graceful exit. You see? Now, you would make all calculations without referring to any particular inflationary model, just in terms of the energy density and pressure, and then you are getting the following formula for the amplitude of the Newtonian potential, which will be generated on this stage. And this amplitude is expressed through the ratio of the energy density to Planck and density at the moment when horizon or perturbation leaves the Einstein elevator, and in terms of deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant. And this deviation comes in the numerator, as you understand. Now, you could take this spectra, then you could, after that, here estimate what would be the slope in the region when we observe this spectra, and characterize this thing with the help of spectral index. Spectral index n equal 1 corresponds to flat spectra, highest conservative spectra. But if you use this formula, which I told you about, then you see that ns minus 1 is never equal to 0. There are two contributions. The obviously first contribution is negative because epsilon plus pressure is positive. Second contribution characterizes you how equation of state is changing with the time towards the end of the inflation. And of course, if you want successfully leave the inflation, then this term also should be negative. Now, first term is 3%, 0.03. The making estimate, without assuming some kind of craziness about equation of state, you are getting prediction for the spectral index that it should be in the region between 0.92 and 0.97. And this is quite important prediction of inflation. As you understand, that this is robust, as robust prediction as omega equal 1. So people, in principle, and I was saying this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, in distinction from my lovely friends, you have always have to try to case this kind of deviation, yeah.
I mean, that same argument also predicts that, you know, significant amplitude of gravity waves.
Yeah, you will go to the next place.
If you don't observe gravity waves, you would say,
no.
From that point of view, that's it.
No. First of all, I think we will accept gravity wave, no doubt. But I can tell you also the other thing that, in principle, I could complicate a little bit more, though, and I would consider here non-trivial dependence on kinetic energy, and then in the game comes one more parameter in so-called effective speed of sound, and this effective speed of sound in k-inflationary model is much smaller than 1. There, in these models, which I invented, but I don't like them, in fact, yeah, because it's extra parameter, you see, there comes Cs in the amplitude. And if Cs is much smaller than 1, then you could suppress the contribution of the gravity wave as much as you want. With the help of Cs larger than 1, you could increase it. So you could make actually some kind of slow roll, K inflation is non-trivial kinetic term. You see, but this is extra parameter, let's say. Now, as Jason correctly said, the amplitude for the gravity wave, because if it doesn't, gravity wave depends only on curvature, so on energy density. Pressure is irrelevant, and therefore, for the gravity wave, there is no this kind of contribution like 1 divided by P plus epsilon for the amplitude. And therefore, you are getting for the ratio of tensor perturbation to scalar perturbation this kind of estimate, which is generic estimate. Now, if you would consider today quadrupole scales, then these quadrupole scales would correspond to the time when this 1 plus p over epsilon was 10 minus 2 for the reasonable restriction on the rate of change of the equation of state. In this case, of course, I have definite prediction for the gravity wave. And I have called advertise this prediction. The contribution of the gravity wave should be between 10 and 15% to the quadrupole component of the CMB fluctuations. You see, if you will not find them, it's not actually big tragic, so I will not commit suicide, as in the case when, for instance, you would find that there are wrong deviation of spectrum. No, commit suicide, okay, it's twice. Yeah. But would not quit inflation. Yeah, but you understand that actually the most likely thing is to find this gravity wave. And if you find them, then it would be actually, I think, after that, no doubt. In spite of the fact that I have no doubt after this, people found deviation of spectral interest from n equal 1. You see, some people, of course, had no doubt in 82 that it was like this one. Yeah? But then inflation was proved already before. But you understand that there should be some critical number of data which really convince people that it's an unavoidable thing. Now, okay, I have no time, but I will take 5 minutes for the data. So, first of all, I summarize. This summary, which is 10 years old, basically. So you shouldn't think that actually I'm changing my talk about theoretical part depending on the experimental result. So, I have confirmation that it was like this part. I think idea and basic properties of inflation are established. Inflation is the stage of accelerated expansion of the unit with graceful exit to freedom. You see, scenarios have no idea. So, irrespective of the scenarios, when I describe inflation with the help of effective equation of state with a minimal number of parameters, there are robust predictions. And among these robust predictions, special reflected universe slightly red-tilted spectrum of scalar perturbations. Perturbations are Gaussian because it's amplified vacuum fluctuations and gravity wave. So these three things should be found. No, at least two. And I explain these three things beginning with one parameter model. You see, one parameter means that I am just fixing the scale of the inflation and I impose reasonable constraint on the deviation of equation of state from n equal 1. From scenarios, okay, there are more ambitious things depend, okay, prediction of concrete NS, etc., but I do not know. In fact, actually, will we ever learn something about scenario? Because scenario should be based on particle physics model. Particle physics model much beyond standard model, you understand? And it's quite unclear we'll be able to go so far. But irrespective of this kind of thing, nevertheless, we could learn something about cosmology, because you understand that cosmology is not just certain of particle physics. Cosmology has its own purposes. And learning the fact that our universe went through the stage of accelerated expansion is even more important than particular particle physics models of maybe 3 or 4 light interaction types. You understand? Now, what is comparison with observations? What usually people measure, of course, you have seen it many times, is correlation function. You take correlation function, expand it in terms of the spherical harmonics, is the same thing as Fourier expansion, but on the sphere, as you understand. Two-dimensional sphere Fourier expansion, you could think about it. And you characterize perturbation with the help of the amplitude, okay, CL, multiplied by L squared is the amplitude, typical amplitude in the scales, in the angular scales, theta, which is equal 1 over L. So L about 200 corresponds to 1 degree, and then you know that larger L corresponds to smaller angular scale, smaller L corresponds to larger angular scale. Now, if you would now take this prediction of inflation, recalculate it to the present times, and you have certain curves, okay? For the amplitude of perturbation versus angular scale or multiple. Here are large angular scale, here are small angular scale. So this is the situation which we had before Boomerang and Maxim result. So already here you could see this is copy which got Nobel Prize, basically. And this copy, in principle, see this perturbation in the most virgin way. They are not deformed after inflation, because it's the scale which are larger than the curvature scale at the moment when radiation decoupled. Here, the spectra in this region was some kind of deformed as a result of hydrodynamical evolution, but here, everything is under complete control. Also, because it's driven by usual physics, which you know, it's gas dynamics, radiation, kinetic equation, etc., etc., etc. Therefore, given input after inflation, this part will be calculated very well. Here, as you see, it's one sigma. One sigma usually doesn't mean too much, but if you would ask some people from the street even to draw curves, that he would draw probably like this one. So already at this moment of time, people would say that, for instance, 5 minutes more, yeah? That, for instance, where before Boomerang and Maximum, see, for instance, these cosmic textures or cosmic strings, they're all down, because they never predict this kind of, no, maybe not, okay, because everything.
No,
it's not. No, it's not true. Yeah, it's not true. Yeah, right. Because
actually, it's the secondary picture.
Yeah, second peak would say that it's acoustic. Here, it's a kind of hill, because actually, there also, you could have some kind of rays and then fall. So, you could get the things, but it was not quite so. Well, now, what changed with Boomerang and Maxwell? You see, people added these red points here with much better arrow bar. And therefore, after this copy experiment, this Boomerang and Maxima experiment were extremely important because it began the era of precision cosmology, as you understand. And already with this result, people established that there was the first Doppler peak. You see, about second Doppler peak, you could say nothing. There was a lot of mess here. By the way, people could learn one more lesson how to write scientific papers, yeah, because people haven't seen here second Doppler peak, and they wrote 200 papers explaining the absence of the second Doppler peak, yeah. But theorists usually should take critical experimental data and, you see, do not make on kind of the, how it's called, this kind of mess, any kind of conclusions, and do not suggest 300 theories, okay, with broken inflation, shaken inflation, what those you see. Because everything finally came in the game. Now, already at this time, people established, found the location of first Doppler peak, and they found that omega should be equal 1. So it was extremely important thing, because all observational data, astronomical observational data, were telling us that omega should be 0.3. This was the reason why some people became nervous and started to write papers about open inflation, which right now everybody wants to forget. Why is there astronomical data with omega 0.33 also were confirmed? But at this time, people could not imagine that there would be something like dark energy component, which filled us, gave us this gap, filled this gap of missing energy. But when people discover that there could be that energy component, then in Nature, not in Nature, physics today, on the front page, there appeared some kind of statement like inflation is ruled out because it doesn't predict cosmology, it didn't predict that energy. So, you see, journalists, people who gave interpreted the thing which was strong in favor of inflation against inflation. So you understand that it's also an unusual situation when actually people deform facts in some kind of strange way because they do not understand the relevance of these facts. Now, but the things of course came in place after WMA got this nice result. And I am showing you right now this curve after 3W. After 3 years. You see, after 1 year, there was some kind of suspicious thing. For instance, this point was somewhere here. So, I can tell you that some people who were aware of this point also wrote some paper about broken inflation to explain this point. Not experimentalists. Then I was asking Pablo Bernardis, okay, what does it mean, this bloody stuff? He told me, Slav, okay, forget about it, it's not your problem, it's our problem, and we'll find a way how to solve it. Now, point after 3 years came into place. But the most amazing thing is that nobody knows until now why it's so. Because when people take 1 year data, it's here. When people take 3 years data, it comes here. When you ask them, what is the reason? Maybe you change the method, how you do this thing? No changes.
I think they redeemed it. I think they redeemed it.
I don't know, maybe there was some secret American satellite flowing around. I don't know, I just proved frequency. But because the whole thing came back. And at the beginning, actually, it was not so right. Other thing, actually, which scared people, from which people made sensation from the very beginning, is quadruple. You see, in principle, if you would forget about all kind of stuff, like this one, because you understand that these components are statistically independent. So you will get for this quadruple the probability 5%, because within the universe you have only 5 samples for the quadruple. This is cosmic variance, is 2 things, statistical variation. You see? But people actually made some kind of strange estimate, and they got, instead of 5%, they got 1 divided by 600 probability. You see, they made big deal out of it. I don't know how they managed to do this, but I know this story from F. Staffel, who at the beginning was explaining why quadruple is so low, and when the referee asked him, statistically justify these things, and he found that in fact actually probability for this quadruple is 30 times more than people were considering. So he wrote 2 papers with one, which was explained why quadruple is low with the help of some kind of unusual model. And the answer, okay, he put it the same day, where he was saying that there is no need to explain this. And I was shocked by the asking, what does it mean, these 2 contradictory papers? He told that, okay, it was a funny story because referee wrote extremely positive report on his paper where he explains this thing, but referee asked to justify this thing. When he found that there is nothing to justify, that he got very negative report, you see, because guy was upset. But now everybody agrees that there is nothing to explain here, and there is no need to give interview to the New York Times about non-trivial topology of our universe. You see? Also, non-trivial topology is in complete disaster disagreement with, of course, all these kind of inflationary scenarios.
So just a comment. So the one thing was not quadruple, which was never very significant.
Yeah.
I think it was in isotropy of the moment.
There is also so-called alignment.
Which I think, you're right, it's not.
And there is difference between north and south sky. But this kind of thing, okay, is not in my competence, and of course, not serious should discuss this thing, but experimentalist, because I think it's a question of systematic and subtraction of the background. Because no serious people would believe that there is difference between north and south, how it's called, sky.
So we do really have, there is a problem of systematics there. It's not
of course, but it should be clarified, but not by me, okay? I'm not specialist there. But the most important thing is that actually all these points are coming here. And by the way, when the first year data, okay, I'm sorry actually, but now it's blah 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 mostly. So where's the first year data? You're coming, I was talking to Lyman Page, But of course these guys were keeping secret everything. I was in Princeton. So once I looked in the room where they had the secret meeting. It was the first time when everybody paid attention to my appearance and they switched off all the computers and asked, what do you need here? Then, of course, I was provoking Lyman and telling my guys, look, actually, I have seen today in the dream the arrow bar on the left side of the Doppler peak, or the first peak, are much larger than on the right side. So you see, it's really the case. I didn't know about this. I really have seen it in the dream. But then Lyman actually bought this provocation. He thought, look how cosmic variance looks. You see, why actually it's so? Because this red line means that here we see in observable universe you have much less representative for the appropriate component for this statistical distribution. Here, much more. Therefore, here the thing should combine concern with the things much better. Now, after first year, there was actually extreme arrow bars here. Now, after 3 years, people went to third Doppler peak. By the way, the data in the region of third Doppler peak are not so good as data of Boomerang 3. But here, there are the data on the other ground-based experiment. There will be Planck satellite which will go until here. But already, because here there is a lot of point, you can make some kind of precision estimate of the cosmological parameters, because this curve depends on the composition of the universe, and it depends, by the way, on the composition of the universe, it depends also on the initial conditions. There are enough data to get the things with very high precision. Also, besides of this thing, people measured after 3 years a component of background polarization. Now, there is prediction for B component of background polarization, which in this region should be due to the gravity wave. Now, what was found? First of all, it was found that 75% of the total energy density is in this dark energy component in our universe. And I think it's much more convincing thing for the existence of dark energy than, for instance, supernova observation. Because for supernova observations, there is still systematics, in spite of the fact that people claim it, but they can never be sure how good is this kind of standard curve. Now, in the case, if you do not use any kind of pathological model with Hubble constant, which is 30, yeah, now you have to break the things down. There is no way to explain this curve without dark energy. You see, I can, by the way, bet about dark energy, I lost it, and I am happy that I lost it, and I was convinced after this data that without dark energy you cannot explain this data. The other thing, which actually became extremely important after 3 years data, because you understand, of course, you could clarify here, you have 22.2 or something, 22.3, but who cares actually? You have 5.1% of baryon in our universe. But why you needed 3 years data and what you need more? Because you see, with better statistics and with better estimate here of the optical depths, people were able to extract very good information about spectral index. Because in the first double you must predict spectral index, which people advertised was 0.96 plus minus 0.04. So you understand that it's one signal level, it says nothing. At the beginning when there was confusion about this Rayleigh spectral index, okay, some kind of sensation which was made at the level of 2 sigma. Now when I'm talking to these guys, okay, before this 3 years, here it is, I asked, should I expect this kind of surprise like Rayleigh spectral index, okay? People told me, no, don't worry, now we don't put in the abstract of the paper something which is based on 2 level sigma, yeah? But, of course, now Rayleigh spectral index is born. And what was discovered, we discovered the things which even these guys, I mean, didn't expect to discover. I remember that 3 years ago, some conference in Stockholm, but in Sweden, there was thinking cosmology, there was some kind of pool. What is important to do next? Find with better precision that omega is equal to 1 or something else. And I was probably the only guy who was pushing this deviation of spectral index from n equal to 1. Lyman also was there, he paid attention not to the majority, but he paid attention to minority, because he's American. You see, I mean it. And they were really pushing very hard to find this kind of deviation of spectral index from n equal 1, okay, which perhaps, okay, we predicted. It's cheapest in 1981, because we got this kind of logarithmic spectra, nearly flat, and our number in 1991 was 0.96. And what WMAP found, they found 0.95, and then you see at 3 levels sigma, you see deviation of spectral index from n equal 1. And it's extremely important physical result, because it shows you logarithmic running for the amplitude of the spectra, and this logarithmic running is related with simple physical origin. This logarithmic running is due to the necessity of graceful exit from inflation. If people would find that n equal 1 is accuracy 1%, I would say that, okay, you can forget about this thing, that this thing would be established. Now, what is the next task?
These numbers are without tensors, right? If you include the tensors, it's consistent with Harrison's knowledge.
If you include, actually, too much,
No, well, not too much. You are saying that gravity waves is part of the prediction.
If you locate 10%, 15% of the gravity wave, yeah, then this thing is extremely large vast. Also, you never know what is this three sigma for experimentally. So I asked Lyman Page how much he would bet on this deviation from his own money. Mm-hmm. Lyman answered to me, in terms of my own money, I would bet a lot, many thousands. So you see, it's already serious statement. But you understand that here error once
he's rich.
No. Okay, Hawking is also very rich, but he bet on his result against $250. I'm sorry.
Because knowledge is very gambling.
Yeah, okay.
This is not physical.
No, but hold on. I think you should take your own lesson, which is, you know, 2 sigma is not a result.
No, 2 sigma, but 3 sigma.
This is
you know that it's like this.
But if no, it's 3 sigma. Goes away.
Wait. You cannot declare. You know that it's like the book. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than the us. So 3 sigma actually are some kind of different sigma. But I am not saying because Lyman put on the many thousand. I am not sure that he would put on Rani spectral in this many thousand. But you see, the point is the following, that these error bars would be shrinked by order of magnitude with the Planck experiment. And of course, in this case, you will see very clearly what is time. So, if Planck experiment will confirm these things, then I think it would be the greatest thing, because, as Weinberg was saying all the time, okay, look, this light spectra comes everywhere, okay, people from optical society told me, okay, come on, but who tells you that the spectra should be flat? Spectra should never be flat. If flat spectra, people who find flat spectra, it would rule out inflation in this thing. So, this kind of running of the spectral is as important as... okay, but the talk anyway is nearly all. I think electricity is on, so sorry. So, you see, and then there is the next task, of course, which was predicted by Stravinsky in 1979, namely the gravitational waves. And these gravitational waves could be found only with the help of this measurement of B component of polarization, of background radiation.
So I'm not making a comment on that, I'm just saying the same way you saw these blips disappearing.
Which?
Well, the blips in like the peak, I was wondering and so on.
Yeah.
Those things were 3 sigma. But it is a peak, right? So
yeah, okay, cool.
Well, they were never 3 sigma.
No, they were never 3 sigma. By the way, they were never 3 sigma. What was the difference? But we can actually discuss it later. Anyway, actually, there is this clear indication of the deviation spectrum. I do not claim, I don't give my hand, okay, on this deviation. Again, gave hand only on prediction, but not an experimental result. And the next thing is the gravity wave. So at the level of 10-15%, they for sure will be found if the experiment will be done the same before, satellite experiment, which is 1 billion, and which is supposed to be launched in 2017. But there is other experiment now, actually, which people are pushing in Canada, which is only 5 million, which is spider experiment, and perhaps people could find it in the balloon experiment. You see, people, when I talk to Dick and Carlo Cantanti, they talk, then, because of this kind of tremendous progress, again, in technology, they can have so good detectors, so probably, perhaps, if the experiment will go, they could find this kind of bigger point of polarization by 2011. So, you see, okay, I think, actually, the existence of this kind of accelerated stage can be clearly confirmed within the next several years. Yeah, okay, sorry for taking too much time, really.
No, that's good.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.